as the mute effects of the presses. Even in the techniques of syncopation, there is nothing that was not present in rudimentary form in Brahms and outdone by Schoenberg and Stravinsky. The practice of contemporary popular music has not so much developed these techniques as conformistically dulled them. The listener, who expertly view these techniques with astonishment, are in no way technically educated thereby, but react with resistance and rejection as soon as the techniques are introduced to them in those contexts in which they have their meaning. Whether a technique can be considered progressive and rational depends on its meaning and on its place in the whole of society as well as in the organization of the particular work. Technical development as such can serve crude reaction as soon as it has established itself as a fetish and by its perfection represents the neglected social tasks as already accomplished. This is why all attempts to reform mass music and regressive listening on the basis of what exists are frustrated. Consumable art music must pay by the sacrifice of its consistency. Its faults are not artistic. Every incorrectly composed or outmoded chord bespeaks the backwardness of those to whose demand accommodation is made. Page 297. But technically consistent, harmonious mass music purified of all the elements of bad pretense would turn into art music and at once lose its mass basis. All attempts at reconciliation, whether by market-orientated artists or collectively-orientated art educators, are fruitless. They have accomplished nothing more than handicrafts or the sort of products with which directions for use or a social text must be given, so that one may be properly informed about their deeper background. The positive aspects for which the new mass music and regressive listenings are praised, vitality and technical progress, collective breath and relations to an undefined practice, into whose concepts there has entered the supplicant self-denunciation of the intellectuals, who can thereby finally end their social alienation from the masses in order to coordinate themselves politically with contemporary mass consciousness. This positive is negative. The eruption into music of a catastrophic phase of society. The positive lies locked up solely in its negativity. Fetishized mass music threatens the fetishized cultural goods. The tension between the two spheres of music has so grown that it becomes difficult for the official sphere to hold its ground. However, little it has to do with the technical standards of mass music. If one compares the special knowledge of a jazz expert with that of a Toscanini worshipper, the former is far ahead of the latter. But regressive listening represents a growing and merciless enemy, not only to museum cultural goods, but to the age-old sacral function of music as the locus for the taming of impulses. Not without penalty and therefore not without restraint are the debased products of musical culture surrendered by disrespectful play and sadistic humor. In the face of regressive listening, music as a whole begins to take on a comic aspect. One need only listen to the uninhibited sonority of a choral rehearsal from outside. This experience was caught with great force in a film by the Marx Brothers, who demolish an opera set as if to clothe an allegory. The inside of the philosophy of history and the decay of the operatic form, all in a most estimable piece of refined entertainment, break up a grand piano in order to take possession of its strings in their frame as the true harp of the future, on which to play a prelude. Music has become karmic in the present phase primarily because something so completely useless is carried on with all the visible signs of the strain of serious work. By being alien to solid people, music reveals their alienation from one another, and the consciousness of alienation vents itself in laughter. In music, or similarly in lyric poetry, the society which judged them karmic becomes karmic. But involved in this laughter is the decay of the sacral spirit of reconciliation. Page 298. All music today can very easily found, as Parsifal did, to Nietzsche's ear. It recalls comprehensible rites and surviving masks from an earlier time and is provocative nonsense. The radio, which both wears out music and overexposes it, makes a major contribution to this. Perhaps a better hour may at some time strike even for the clever fellow. One in which they may demand, instead of prepared material ready to be switched on, the improvisatory displacement of things as the sort of radical beginning that can only thrive under the protection of the unshaken real world. Even discipline can take over the expression of free solidarity if freedom becomes its content. As little as regressive listening is a symptom of progress in consciousness of freedom, it could suddenly turn around if art, in unity with the society, should ever leave the road of the always identical. Not popular music, but artistic music has furnished a model for this possibility. It is not for nothing that Mahler is the scandal of all bourgeois musical aesthetics. They call him uncreative because he suspends their concept of creation itself. Everything with which he occupies himself is already there. He accepts it in its vulgarized form. His themes are expropriated once. Nevertheless, nothing sounds as it has wanted to. All things are diverted as if by a magnet. What is worn out yields pliantly to the improvising hand. The used paths win a second life as variance. Just as the chauffeur's knowledge of his old second-hand car can enable him to drive it punctually and unrecognized to its intended destination, so can the expression of a beat-up melody straining under the pressure of clarinets and oboes in the upper register arrive at places which the approved musical language could never safely reach. Such music really crystallizes the whole into which it has incorporated the vulgarized fragments into something new, yet it takes its material from regressive listening. Indeed, one can almost think that in Mahler's music, this experience was seismographically recorded 40 years before it permeated society. But if Mahler stood atward the concept of musical progress, neither can the new and radical music, whose most advanced practitioners give alliance to him in a seemingly paradoxical way, any longer be subsumed exclusively under the concept of progress. It proposes to consciously resist the phenomenon of regressive listening. The terror which Schoenberg and Webern spread today as in the past comes not from their incomprehensibility, but from the fact that they are all too correctly understood. Their music gives form to that anxiety, that terror, that insight into the catastrophic situation which others merely evade by regressing. Page 299. They are called individualists, and yet their work is nothing but a single dialogue with the powers which destroy individuality, powers whose formless shadows fall gigantically on their music. In music, too, collective powers are liquidating an individuality past saving, but against them, only individuals are capable of consciously representing the aims of collectivity.